Okay, excellent. So welcome to the IAPC Code Enforcement Subcommittee meeting. It is Monday, January 31st, 2022. And we are going to first, everybody I hope has the meeting agenda and the previous meeting minutes. We're going to start with a roll call by Mr. Williams.
Chairperson Pollack from Ward 6.
Here.
Subcommittee member Mr. Andrews from Ward 4.
Here.
Madam Chair, you do have a quorum.
Excellent. First thing we want to do is review the previous meeting minutes from way back. May 12, 2021 was our last subcommittee meeting, and everybody should have gotten a copy of that. And what all we need to do is go through and see if anybody's got any questions. And if somebody can make a motion to accept those meeting minutes. Let me just look really quick. I did look them over. And basically where we were at the time was just a little more discussion from questions we had about how public outreach works with the code enforcement process. And somebody had, somebody from code enforcement was talking to us about that. Then we had a discussion about code enforcement inspector training and got some more information about that process. And then we had just a discussion about where we go from here going forward back in May. And that was basically, we had a couple of things on the future agenda, which was kind of the next part in the process, next couple parts. It was sampling of cases, code enforcement cases. We're going to discuss the methods and the approach. And then one of the next steps was the draft audit report. So those were basically what we had discussed at the last meeting. Does anybody have any questions about that? I didn't see anything in there personally. Does somebody want to make a motion that we accept the meeting minutes?
Madam Chair, Brian Andrews, and I did review these minutes and compared them with notes and agree that these accurately reflect more or less what we discussed at the May 12th meeting. So I move that we vote to accept these meeting minutes as printed.
Okay, and I'll second that. And so all in favor of accepting the meeting minutes, say aye.
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 Mr. Clark?
Yeah, I wasn't okay. There. But yeah, I'd vote aye.
Okay. Anybody? But so three of us have said aye, so there's no opposition because there's only three of us. So we can move on to the next agenda item. Okay, the next. The next agenda item is the code enforcement status update. Since we last met in May, I think there's been some changes in what's happening at code enforcement. And maybe we can have somebody from code enforcement staff give us an update on that. I'm not sure who that would be, but
Madam Chair, we do have Director Carlos De La Torre available.
Okay. We're hearing it straight from the head person. Thanks, Carlos.
Well, thank you. Well, good afternoon. I just want to provide you some numbers, overall numbers for 2021. So overall, code enforcement handled about 8,900 cases, 8,936 to be exact. About 1,644 cases were referred to TPD for weeds and junk motor vehicles. And then the remaining cases, about 7,292, were essentially cases that were handled internally. So overall, roughly each inspector saw roughly about 662 cases per inspector. Roughly 384 citations were issued. About almost 13,000 inspections were conducted. And approximately, or to be exact, 520 court hearings were held last year. So it's about 10 hearings per week. Continue to experience a backlog in our court cases. We still got about 118 hearings that are going to be scheduled between now and April. Most of them are related to either the first time that they're being heard, the infraction hearings, or basically they're on the second hearing, which is called a compliance hearing or continuous hearing. So that's the makeup of those 118 court cases that are still in the queue. So one of the changes we did as of last December, essentially code enforcement took over the weed enforcement of the weeds letters from police as of December 2021. So we had roughly about 850 cases that needed to be reviewed as part of the year 2021. We still are creating some cases. So right now in the queue, we just added an additional 228 cases. Out of those, 36 have been resolved, 25 are pending to be inspected, and 166 still remain to be out on the field. That means that we still need to look into those.
Carlos, the 228 cases, are they from the 850 that were already had been passed to TPD?
No, this is an addition to.
Oh, okay. So there's been 228 cases in January, or I don't quite get it.
Since we transitioned, right, since December until now, right, that's what we got additional weed cases that now, instead of really sending them to TPD, we're now handling those internally. So when we since we made the transition, that is the number that we're seeing.
Okay. And are the 850 still outstanding, or you guys have to go, obviously somebody has to go look at them and figure out if they're still open?
Still having to go back and close those cases so some of them are still being looked at. Yes.
Okay.
So the answer is we're not going to close those until we either verify that they're inspected or they've been addressed. And so we have gotten a lot of complaints that, hey, I got this letter a few months ago. It hasn't been inspected. And yet essentially we do a follow-up inspection and residents are concerned that we're basically barely getting to address those letters, but we're not going to close a case until we fully are able to say that it was looked at, it was addressed, or a next step. So we're not going to forget about those cases.
Hey, could you, I missed the number of citations that got issued last year.
So last year, total citations were 384 citations.
Okay. And then, I know you're just giving a summary, but the citations, do obviously some of them get resolved without going to court? Or do they?
Some of them do, right.
Okay, sorry about that.
And some of them, instead of just being at one court hearing, obviously requires more than two or three hearings each citation. So it all depends on the citation itself.
Excellent.
And the ruling of the judge as well, and how the case is presented by the defendant as well.
Okay, sorry, you were telling us about the 850 still open, and great.
So one of the things that we're doing because of the backlog, we're moving forward and really exercising what's on permissible under the code, where the city has the ability to really to do abatement on outdoor storage or refuse and weeds. So if we get a complaint, or if we get a case, and if it's related to outdoor storage, it's related to weeds and refuse, we basically give the property owner, obviously give the 10-day notice, the opportunity to correct, but at the same time, we issue that 30-day notice that if it's not taken care of, that essentially we will go out and abate that, and we're going to make him responsible for the costs associated with that. So we don't create a particular case for those. We just go out there and abate that. Since November, we have basically addressed about 31 cleanups. And that's really to just deal with those particular cases. One, in a way to avoid running them through the lengthy court process, but also at the same time trying to address a lot of those nuisances that really detract from a lot of the neighborhoods. So we have a lot more contractors available that can assist us, and so they're able to really help us out on abating those outdoor storage or weeds or nuisance that are related to outdoor storage or outdoor code violations. So that's something that we just have infused in the past a couple months.
Okay. And then if that's done, is there a lien placed against the property, or how does that payment for that abatement work?
That's correct. So we initiate essentially the billing process, and then ultimately if it's not paid, then we'll essentially exercise a lien process to get that essentially that those fees to be recovered.
And just out of curiosity, is that a bill to the property owner or the resident?
To the property owner.
Okay.
The other thing that we were facing also, we had a backlog, significant backlog of web mail complaints that were not basically being addressed or were not being attended to. So back in November, we had about over 1,400 cases that had not been entered into our system due to staffing shortages. So we're basically, we're caught up on that, and we don't have that backlog, just our normal backlog that we would normally have on any given week. So all those cases that had been submitted during web mail have all been entered into our system. So we took care of that.
Okay, excellent.
We obviously continue to be short staff. We still need to fill essentially two of our current code enforcement positions. And so that's something that we are, we're actively working on that. We have been authorized also to hire an additional two more inspectors, and one that we had assigned to another area. We're trying to get that position replaced. So total, we're going to be adding to our staffing levels of code enforcement officers an additional five officers. So today we have nine officers that are in full active duty. And so so total, it makes it 10 inspectors with the one that is assigned to environmental services. So the idea is once we bring all those folks on board, we'll have a total of 14 inspectors overall.
But right now there's 10.
Right. Mm-hmm. The good thing is that we have been getting a good response on the job posting. So we got quite a bit of a good pool. As last time we checked, was roughly around 30 applicants. So I think that's a good set of numbers in terms of trying to route them through our intake and processing, so that we can begin the hiring process or the interview process for those folks to fill those positions.
Carlos, for my notes, I missed, you have 10 and then you have one that's assigned to?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. Okay. We still continue to work with a lot of the other departments, Tucson Fire, Planning Development Services, Tucson Police Department, on really trying to deal with a lot of those vacant and neglected structures. And also the other one that we're putting a lot of emphasis, or we've been asked to put a lot of emphasis on that, It's also the homeless camps. So that's another thing we're spending a lot of time and effort on doing that. Not only as a request of residents, but also businesses as well. So we're having to commit some resources to be able to do that. The other thing that we have been working on is, as you recall, we're looking into migrating into a new software system. They put a pause on that program. The original intent was for us to migrate into that system at the end of November. Due to staffing and due to some other things that have come along, they have delayed the implementation until this March. So, and we continue to be engaged with that. Most likely that will probably change a little bit more. But we don't know how far they're going to extend that time frame. In terms of really what's coming in for us in the future, the city attorney's office has made a couple trips to Phoenix. The direction from mayor and council was like, can we mirror the lead process that Phoenix has in a way to develop some more of a stringent mechanism, really to impose liens on properties and for us to recover the investments. So that process is underway. And so most likely we would need to change our process and maybe add some resources really to be in the same similar position as what Phoenix program has. But obviously that's going to require not only additional staffing from our end, but also all the different levels throughout the organization really to be able to support that. So not only inspectors, but also case managers, and then also dedicated legal staff really, so they can file the liens appropriately. So that's something that we continue to work with the city attorney's office to make that happen. The other thing is, courts have asked us really to start looking at the feasibility of migrating into an electronic citation process. All of our citations are currently just done by hand in paper. So we just need to look at what would it take really for us to migrate into an electronic citation process. We need to understand that a little bit more, not only in terms of what's going to be required from our end, in terms of, is it going to help us? Is it going to take more time? What type of technology do we need? What type of equipment do we need? And really what is going to be the end benefit for the division as a whole to migrate into that system? So we're barely going to be looking at that in the next few months.
Can you talk just a little bit about how some of this came to being? Because I know that the city council had a study session, but everybody else may not know about that.
Okay, so City Council, we were asked really to provide City Council an overview of our code enforcement operations, kind of where we were and what are some of the issues that we were dealing with. They want to have a better understanding in terms of really what type of cases do we have, the number, what the process looked like, and see if we needed to infuse additional resources to the code enforcement divisions. We really provide Mayor and Council an overview of all the areas where code enforcement is responsible for, not only in terms of really regulating businesses, peddlers, all the environmental services regulations, the neighborhood preservation ordinances, Chapter 16, we deal with streets and sidewalks as well, floodplain issues or stormwater issues, the light pollution code, and other chapters that are essentially located throughout the Tucson Municipal Code. The other thing we're involved is really the Unified Development Code, that is the Land Use Code, the Unified Building Code, which is that's where you encompass all the building code requirements. So all that stuff, the Code Enforcement Division becomes to be the enforcement arm for all those components. So the major type of violations that code enforcement looks at is property maintenance, just weeds, junk motor vehicles, refuse storage, zoning and permits, whether you adequately did a change of use in your property, or if you really have a certificate of occupancy for the activity that you're actually doing. Also, we look at emergencies. If somebody runs a car into a building, we respond to that. Fires, we respond to fires just to make sure that the building is secure and it's safe really to occupy or really guide the property owner to seek the proper permits, the sign permits. So those are the things that essentially that we provided the council an overview of kind of where we at in the overall numbers. Then we provided them a historical view in terms of really what where we've been, some of the cases, in terms of the increase in cases, reduction in cases, and why we attributed some of the things that we were looking at that. So one of the things that we proposed is one of four main things is really start adding some additional help, additional resources. So really just to combat the backlog of the web mails or the web complaints, the 1400 complaints that I mentioned earlier, adding some additional code enforcement officers to our division, and really infusing other resources within environmental services really to help out with essentially that backlog. One of the things that is still is pending is there is a within the code, there's the ability really to assess reinspection fees. Those fees are basically are about $75. The city basically didn't continue imposing those fees because it was costing them more to recover those fees than the actual fee itself. So we are evaluating that, whether even if it doesn't cover our cost really to do a reinspection fee or assess that fee for $75, is still some revenue that we can recover and really provide a stronger message that if you don't comply and if your property needs to be inspected, that you may be assessed as a $75 reinspection fee. So we're looking at that internally in terms of what that, if we're going to continue to increase that figure or just stick to that $75 figure. We got to continue to make some effort on the vacant and neglected structures. That's the advanced programs. Continue to work on that. So we need to add more additional funds for that, which the council did. Allowed us or gave us additional dollars. It is really just our ability really to run in through the court process to make sure that we essentially get the abatement notice or the abatement authority to abate some of those properties. And then the other thing, we are working with other departments really to develop some quick response teams, what we call them, really to abate nuisances and quote-unquote violations in special focal points that are either related to a lot of high crime activity, a lot of illegal dumping, or essentially a lot of homelessness activity that is affecting those neighborhoods. So we're barely in the process of trying to get that organized, not looking at it in terms of code enforcement, but also environmental services, and working with other departments such as Housing and Community Development and Tucson Police Department, really to deploy those teams and find the best way on how we can support each other on that and really provide essentially the public the response that they're looking for. So that was kind of, in a sense, is just a major overview of kind of where code was, what we needed, and some of the things that essentially that we were proposing really to start looking into that. The other thing that we proposed to as well is maybe looking back and restarting a Brush and Bulky Plus program, really to provide more of a strategic neighborhood cleanup efforts throughout the community. We want to make sure that also the other thing was it maybe infused within our resources, not just a code enforcement officers, but maybe some sort of a social service program, really to provide resources and assistance to specialty cases, and that sometimes we may need that extra help really to abate some of those nuisances. And also we also looking at how do we assign a specific, add more resources to magistrates in the city prosecutor's office, really to ensure that we can clear a lot of those cases through our process. So those are some of the things that we discussed with the council, give us direction to proceed and begin to move that forward. So that was.
Hey, is there a follow-up to these study sessions, or how does it work? So there was an awful lot of information you said, and a lot of things that were already done, and some things that everybody's gonna investigate. Do you come back to those study sessions later and have another one, or how does the follow-up work?
They didn't specify a particular time on when we needed to go back, but probably given the fact that we made a little bit of progress, we probably may go back to them. I would say maybe March or April of this year, really just to give him an idea in terms of where we're at overall.
Okay. So, commissioners, do you have any questions or comments or anything about what Mr. De La Torre said?
This is Brian Andrews. Mr. De La Torre, in fairness to code enforcement, when you guys took over some of the responsibilities of other departments, did they transfer budget monies to help you facilitate those additional duties, if you will?
Mr. Andrews, no, that's no, it there was no transfer of that. There was no transfer of additional resources. And I think it was the other way around. I think resources were taken away as well as positions. So if you really look back in before the consolidation, I think overall, I think that there's some figures that we had like over 40 inspectors citywide, and now we're basically down to just a handful, a dozen or so. So no, that didn't occur.
Okay, thank you. Just wondering, what do you have some opinions or programs or plans for what would help the success of the program currently? It sounds like you guys have a tremendous workload with a tremendous lack of resources at the moment.
So Mr. Andrews, I think going through this exercise, really looking at this in terms of what you're doing, in terms of really looking at how we do business and maybe finding ways on how we can improve some of those processes. And I think we've done okay, but I think it really gets to the point that we can only achieve so many cases or look at so many cases per week or per inspector. And so I think if we really want to essentially improve on the timeliness and really our responsiveness, it's really the need really to add additional officers, really just to make sure that we have a much better spread of officers per case or per cases. So probably if you ask me what, not doubling, but I would say by adding at least another 50% of our workforce would certainly put us in a good light. So if we are to 12 essentially officers combined, if we go to 18, I think that would help us out significantly, really cutting back on our responsiveness and really our coverage. I think that would help out. And then we can certainly take a look at it and want to see how effective and efficient we are with those resources. And if we still can't really make ends meet, then certainly we can enter our way to more positions down the road. But I think one of the things we gotta keep in mind is also it's our current program is just complaint driven. But I think there's a lot of stuff that we can begin to migrate and really work much closer with the neighborhood associations, really to be a little bit more proactive on solving a lot of those neighborhood issues. And I think the only way we can do that is really adding more additional resources, not only to react to those concerns, but also to react and really abate a lot of those nuisances right away. So coupled with that, in terms of additional inspectors, we also need to create those quick response teams that we can basically go out there and abate a lot of those things on the spot, even before they get to be a major nuisance. So that's kind of being on the fence line of going, being reactive to being proactive, but really creating essentially that fine line or just being in the fence. That I think would bring a lot of value to the work that we do and really improve a lot of the concerns that are brought up to us on a regular basis. But again, being proactive on that and working with our partner departments such as Tucson Fire, Tucson Police, on really saying if we have, for example, if we have an area where we have a lot of folks that are gathering in an area that is creating a homeless camp or creating really a lot of trash and debris, we can certainly go out and cite all those property owners and go through the whole process. Well, can we be much more effective of us really going out there and really trying to address those issues upfront rather than to create a code enforcement case for that? Clearly, we got to be careful, and that is one of some of the things are clearly responsibility of the property owner. Some of the other things may be out of control of the property owner, and he just basically being a victim of whatever's occurring around his property. But how do we create that uncomfortable environment? How do we create that clean environment that really allows for that type of activity to feel uncomfortable, and that way they go somewhere else? And that's really kind of the intent of what we're trying to do. It is really add more resources from an inspection perspective, but add some resources so we can address some of those nuisances throughout the community.
Thank you very much.
And Mr. De La Torre mentioned about working with neighborhood associations. Just to give you an idea, they're, according to the internet and lists that we have, there are approximately 148 Tucson-sanctioned neighborhood associations. So that's a pretty large number. Some of them have next to no code enforcement issues, while others have, you know, large numbers. But that's a lot of neighborhoods. And I have to say that I live in Garden District neighborhood, and Mr. De La Torre's group and TPD and the Neighborhood Association just did a drive-through in an area last week where we're experiencing higher crime. And it was very beneficial to have everybody all in one at one time discussing the issues and the possibilities of how those could be knocked down and you could gain control back again, reduce the crime, reduce the homeless camps and the blight in the neighborhood. So I can see firsthand really how that can work. And his department has done that before with at least a couple of other neighborhoods that we know of that are in the area. And it is a real powerful tool. But as he mentioned, it takes resources. Now, Mr. Clark, you're new commissioner, and I forgot to introduce you to Mr. De La Torre. So Mr. Clark is a new commissioner, and he agreed to join our code enforcement team. And he's kind of coming in on the back end of it in a way, but I'm sure he's got some insight in different.
Well, I have a couple of questions, if you don't mind.
Absolutely.
When we're talking about the cost recovery of your procedures, when you make a lien, that doesn't recover cost until the property is sold. Is that correct?
That is correct. So when you do a property transfer, so one of the things that the city's trying to pursue is how can we foreclose on the property sooner rather than later? So it's really, and either potentially tied it in to either your water account or something to that effect, really to provide an incentive for you to really try to pay for that for essentially for that lien or for those charges. So that's what I think the city is trying to do a little bit more beyond just issuing the lien or putting the lien, is really how do we collect it and how do we foreclose on the property to get it paid.
And my other question is, again, and forgive my ignorance on this, and you've probably covered this before, but is there a method in which you triage the cases so that you know where to put your resources?
There is, and so the method to the madness is really, let's start looking on how what we consider an emergency call or basic life and safety situation. So that's how it's really looked at on a daily basis. Then it goes really to really property maintenance or actually basic living standards. Got to make sure that you have running water, you have running toilet, you have water and cooling. on that particular case. Then from that point on, we go into trash and debris. And then from there, we go into zoning or permit violations. And also in the mix of all that stuff is city manager gets complaints on a regular basis. Same thing goes with mayor and council. So we address those as well. So that's really how we prioritize that. We do have what we call a code enforcement manual. And in that manual kind of gives us an idea of how we're going to treat the cases, how we're going to be prioritizing those calls. But that's basically a constant shuffling every single day. And we move a lot of those cases to the top of the line to be able to make sure that those get addressed and those get taken care of. But primarily, it's really what's considered an emergency, what is really considered to be a life and safety situation, basic building components, make sure you got sanitary conditions, you got power, and then from that point on, the other remaining cases. So there's some triage that we do on a regular basis.
Who is responsible for the triage? Who makes those decisions?
So it's really the supervisor, the code enforcement supervisor, who essentially makes those adjustments on a daily basis.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Okay, so unless the commissioners have other questions for Mr. De La Torre on this overview, we can move into a discussion of how we're going to review cases. So anybody have an objection to moving forward here on that? Okay.
No objection.
Okay. Excellent. So we're at the point where we've done all the background work and code enforcement has talked to us about the processes in pretty good, in a lot of detail. And now we were going to actually do an audit of some of the cases. What we need to figure out is what are we looking for and what do we want to end up with? Because there's a lot of avenues. You could simply look at the dates that they were processed. You can look at how many are open and closed and how long it takes to close them. And so I'm just trying to, I was looking for ideas from the other commissioners as to what is our, some of our goals at when we review the cases that might help us to figure out what we want to review. Who's got any ideas on that?
Well, Madam Chair, just rehashing what we talked about at our May meeting, we were looking at perhaps a way to do a statistically random sampling of cases so that everything had a fair chance of being looked at and the committee would be able to review those things with all cases having an equal chance of getting reviewed in some way. You had mentioned that you wanted to see cases that were repetitive in nature, I believe. Did I recall that correctly?
Yeah. Yeah, I was interested in that. And you know, I've thought about too, the randomness and whether that is necessary, because sometimes you want a biased look. So if we did random, we might not run across cases that are repetitive or cases that have been open for a long time or cases in the highest, in the neighborhoods with the highest number of cases. It's a hard way to try and figure out. Because true randomness, you could end up with cases that are just minor. You know, they were weeds and they cleaned it up, and another one was weeds and they cleaned it up, and you might not even run into the difficult ones. So yeah, and you might not be in a good enough sample of neighborhoods where you actually saw problem neighborhoods with repetitiveness and everything. I'm just kind of questioning that randomness. as a good method. And like I said, what do we want to get out of this? So yeah, if you're trying to determine if the process, if the processes are effective, you could look at cases and look and see if they met the timeframes, but or a reasonable time frame. But you know, again, I don't know. I'm kind of stumped at this one on how to and how many cases we need to look at. I think we should have some kind of a spreadsheet, whatever we end up doing. We should have a spreadsheet and some agreed criteria or information that we're looking for. Like maybe yeah, go ahead.
Can I interject real quick? Just to give you some context, whatever the decision you make, I can assist you with the appropriate sample size based on the population to give you a confidence level of whatever you choose. So if you do go with a sample out of the population, I can calculate the statistical piece that we do for our audits so that we could be, if you choose to be 95% confident that your sample represents the population, that's kind of standard. You could go all the way up to 99% confident. And depending on what the population size is, I'll calculate out the sample that you would have to test. And that's a decision you could make.
Yeah, and I, you know, personally, I just don't see how we could sample from the right neighborhoods, basically. Unless we said, okay, we're going to not sample the ones that have less than 50 code enforcement reports a year and just throw those out. You almost have to throw out the high and the low and get in the middle or something. I don't know. I'm kind of wondering. So does anybody, so throughout this whole exercise, we've been, you know, the thing that comes up over and over again is there enough resources? And I think we might see that in the amount of time it takes to abate something. But then it kind of depends on whether it went to court or, you know, or whether it just was handled without going to court. And yeah, I'm stuck on this personally. I don't know what we're looking for exactly.
Do we have a copy of the enforcement code? The thing that director mentioned?
Yeah, so Aaron, could you send that to Mr. Clark, Commissioner Clark? Because we all got a copy at one of the presentations in the beginning.
I can. Would it be useful for me to pull up the subcommittee's audit plan, which gives you your objectives, kind of your roadmap for what you want to look at? I can pull that up on screen if not everybody has it.
I think I have a copy of that already. I printed it out. But I have not the manual or the enforcement procedures.
Yeah, we can, if you want to pull up the scope, that'd be great. It's pretty big, actually.
And then we also have Mr. De La Torre has his hand raised in case you don't see it.
Oh, no, I didn't see that. Sorry about that. Okay, Mr. De La Torre.
So, Madam Chair, just to piggyback a little bit to what Mr. Williams was trying to cover. So in terms of really, if you look, and this is really just some high level numbers, okay? So we're looking at about 10,000 cases a year, okay? And if you want to be able to have a 10% margin of error, that means you have to sample roughly around 200 cases, okay? Or and you individually have to do that. How do you determine that? Certainly you can probably get a sample out of that, a weighted percentage based on the type of cases. So that way you're actually pulling particular cases dealing with hey, is it a vacant and neglected structure? Is it a homeless camp? You're actually looking and diving into those. So I guess all I'm trying to say is, we'll look at 10,000 cases. If you want to be able to have a margin of error of 10%, you got to pull roughly about 200 cases. If you're talking about really a 3% margin of error over 10,000 cases, you're talking about 2,000 cases. So that just gives you kind of the magnitude in terms of looking and pulling those cases. And again, once you identify the sample size, then it's really a matter of, because each case is not the same, then you would have to decide how many cases you want to look at outdoor storage, how many of those are building permit issues, how many of those are related to junk motor vehicles. So that way you can basically dive down and take a look at that case and see how that case was essentially handled. Okay, and probably that exercise would be is, did we follow the right process? Did we miss some steps, or were we a little bit more egregious on that case to handle that case, or we were very flexible with the property owner? So that's what essentially that's going to tell you in terms of diving into each particular case, as compared to really looking at it. If the context is, let's identify out of these cases, how many, what does it take really to solve a particular case? So you take a look at case, you make some assessment in terms of the man hours that it really took to address that case, then you multiply it by the number of cases, and you come up with a typical average timeline of what's needed. And then ultimately you can come up with a quantification, whether we're understaffed or overstaffed. So it all depends what you are trying to really achieve. It's really looking at do we follow the right process? Are we doing things correctly? Or what are some of the opportunities for improvement, which there are? Or the other one is taking a look at those samples, quantifying the amount of time that required, that should have taken to address that case versus the actual time, and then really put in a number in terms of what resources may be needed to address those type of cases, and really identified what resources may be needed or are in excess of addressing those particular situations.
Okay. So maybe we look at the type of case, because you said there's basically some categories: weeds, outdoor storage, JMVs, zoning, housing standards, and then there may be some other ones like homeless camps, but so maybe there are these categories or type of case, and then look at, okay, and then the rest of it can be, did you follow your own process? And then along the way, we would collect the number of days to abate. So that'd be from the time it opened to the time it got abated, the number of hours to abate. Do you guys actually record how many hours? Do the inspectors record the hours they spent? Not really. We just know the lapse time.
Not really, but based on looking at that case, you can make an assessment in terms of really how much time it took. You could put some rough numbers or a rough time frame in terms of what it took really to solve that case, because everything is logged into that case.
Okay, so somebody from CE might have to help us determine what that time, the number of hours spent was. And then we could also, look at whether they're recurring. That's also a kind of a gray area, because they could have only been reported one other time in 2 or 3 years, or it could obviously have been reported multiple times. And that information is available too. And then looking at whether, you know, the process was followed, that's outlined in the CE manual. Okay, so now, does anybody have any thoughts on how many cases? So Aaron, you were talking about, you know, a confidence interval or confidence limit, but so how many, you would have to calculate that, I think probably. the confidence level of 95% on 10,000 cases.
Yes, Madam Chair. Yeah, kind of similar to what Mr. De La Torre gave you the rough numbers on. We would just run it and make it accurate. The 10% margin is a little bit big, but it might fit your purposes. And it might be around the 200 or so. 3% margin of error is a little bit more standard, but it does increase those cases to probably around the 2000 Mr. De La Torre quoted. But it's really up to the commission to decide on what level you want to be at. And then I can help you with the calculations. What you could do then is we could pull whatever that sample is from the population, or we can calculate the number that you need. Then we can look at the categories and take the, so if, for example, you have 200 cases that you have to pull to reach your level, we could then look at the percentage of the category split, and we can then split your 200 sample into those category levels so you get representative of each different level. That way it's not skewed too much towards one type of code versus another.
Right, and I think 200 won't be enough, because there's too many categories, but somewhere in between there. And then, Mr. De La Torre, are we able to sort by the type of case weeds, outdoor storage, GMP? So if we get it, say we have a sample size of 500, are we able to either go pick 100 out of each of five categories? Or how would that be done?
Yeah, you can. You can do that by case type. You can do that by area. You can look at, we can even populate a map, a GIS map with all the 2021 cases. You can pick and choose which ones you want out of that and do that. So there's a lot of ways on how I think we can break down that information.
Okay, great. Just so we didn't pick 500 and then 80% of those turned out to be weeds. You know, we didn't get the other ones. Yeah. Okay, great. So, commissioners, do you have ideas on how you want to see the sampling done and how many cases? Should we let Aaron go ahead and try and do a 95% confidence level and start with that number and see what that number is?
If this is going to result in a report to the mayor and council, probably we should try and be as close as we can in the percentage.
Okay. And Commissioner Andrews, what are your thoughts?
I would agree with that, and we could start with that number and look at those cases and try to identify what types of cases they are, as you suggested as well, to make sure we get a full cross section of the code enforcement cases.
Okay. So, Aaron, if you can run the numbers on the against how many cases are the commissioners in agreement that we should stick to 2021 to for our case samples and not go further back than 2021?
I think that will give us a good sampling using 2021.
Okay. Plus, it'll be current because the process probably changed a little bit in 2020, or there were more or less inspectors or something was different.
Commissioner, didn't you mention that you had just transitioned into another approach just recently?
Are you asking Mr. De La Torre?
Yes, I'm sorry.
Yes.
Commissioner Clark,
Yeah, go ahead.
Yes, but I don't think it's going to really muddy the waters too much, because we just started doing that since at the end of the year, November, December timeframe. So I don't think it's really going to skew the numbers significantly from that perspective.
Thank you.
Okay, so Aaron, can you run those numbers on the 95% conference level and then see what that number is of the number of cases? And then maybe you can you email the commissioners and say, okay, here's the number?
I can do it right now, Madam Chair.
Oh, okay.
So if we go off the estimate of 10,000 cases, if you want to be, so I'll give you a quick rundown for the commissioners. Basically, if you're going to do a sample out of a population, the way you communicate that, the reason these numbers are important is if you did the sample based on the statistical percentage, then you could have a 95% confidence that your sample represents the population within the error rate. So the other point I need is the error rate you want to use. That's the 10% Mr. De La Torre mentioned, or maybe 3%, which is a little bit more standard. If you want 95%, so for example, then if you pulled your sample and you found that 5% are out of compliance, the 3% error rate would make you 95% confident that should you have sampled the whole population, that 5% out of compliance would be plus or minus 3%. So it could be as low as 2 or as high as 8. Mm-hmm. If you do that on 10,000 and you want to be 95% confident with a 3% error rate, it's 964 would be your sample.
Okay.
If you want to, go ahead.
Oh, you know what? He mentioned 8,936 cases in 2021. Were those the number opened, Mr. De La Torre, or are those the number that are closed, or what?
Those are the number of complaints that essentially that we received.
That came in. Okay. But that doesn't count the rollover from the previous year.
Yes, that's correct.
That's another kind of thing maybe we have to figure out. Okay. Okay, so go ahead, Aaron. I think we were looking at the 3% error rate. Is that right, commissioners?
That'd be my guess.
Okay.
Yes.
Okay. So at a 95% confidence level with a plus or minus 3% error rate,
you'd be looking at about 960 on the 10,000. I would get the exact numbers from Director De La Torre and then give you the exact number. You can direct me on how you want to split that up category-wise, geographically, and then we can actually make the sample out of the spreadsheet that we get from Mr. De La Torre and his staff.
Okay, so some thoughts on how to split up the cases amongst the three commissioners. Would it be beneficial to give one person weeds, one person outdoor storage, one person JMBs? Of course, we'd all have about two or three types. Would that be I'm not sure, you know, I'm just kind of kicking this around. Would that be a reasonable way to do it, or should we all be looking at everything? Well, in the end, we're all going to be reviewing each other's results of all the cases that we reviewed. So it might make sense for one person to be looking at all the weed ones and then be drawing the conclusions from what you looked at, rather than splitting them up amongst the three of us. I don't know, does anybody have any thoughts on that?
Well, if I can step in, my own experience tells me that if you keep looking at the same case same type of case, you get a little bit short-sighted over a period of time.
Could be. Do you have any thoughts on that, Ms. Commissioner Andrews?
Well, if they're able to be split up by, let's say, area of the city, and you look at all of the cases in a given area, it would seem as though it would help create a context for how the cases are mitigated, dispatched, handled, and kind of paint a broad picture of the way code enforcement is working, with having each of us looking at different areas. That would give us a chance to do somewhat of a comparative analysis of how code enforcement is working geographically within the city. I know there are areas of the city that probably are more challenging than others as far as the code enforcement effort goes. I'd offer your feedback on that.
Okay, and there happen to be six wards. So we could come up with a way of splitting the wards. So maybe you get one that is more, less dense, and one that is more dense. So it doesn't put the weight on one commissioner either to get all the, well, anyhow, actually, maybe that wouldn't matter because you'd be picking your sample from the different wards. And you probably, that's another thing to think about, if you're going to split up the cases by wards or by the type of case. But I definitely agree that we've heard from the inspectors that, and Commissioner Clark, you could read this in our meeting minutes, but sometimes the level of abatement or the type, the extent of the abatement depended on the neighborhood and where what was more typical for that neighborhood. Sometimes the abatement depended on that. And that was related to the part of town basically that you were in. I think if I got that correct. But so that sounds like a great way to do it. Split it up by, say, ward. Unless you wanted to do a different type of geographic split. If you had any ideas. And you could simply draw, you know, quadrants in the city and then just take one quadrant and, you know, draw XY axis. And that would be four quadrants, and then there's three of us, and then we'd have to figure out how to do the fourth one. So I'm not sure
if Mr. De La Torre's hand is up for this or for if it was up previously, but I do question whether we might be able to do it by the areas of enforcement, and it seemed as though there were 21 or 22 different areas handled by the enforcement inspectors. Mr. De La Torre, could you answer that, if that is the right number?
Yes, it is the right number. So I had my hand raised just for a couple of things, just as a point of suggestion, okay? So and kind of look at it in terms of the entire context of what is really the spirit of intent of, or really what mayor and council are looking at you really to help them out and really make more of an informed decision rather than and have another set of eyes out there to come and do that. So if you're looking into the context and really to be able to have a statistically valid sample, it's we're looking at 10,000 cases. That looks like you're going to have to look at roughly about anywhere between 900 to 1,000 cases. Okay, is that realistic? Okay. And really the time commitment and the practicality of looking into those and really how much time do you need to devote, and how long is it going to take the commission and us really to be able to assist you with during that process? And if the spirit of intent is really, we know our gut feeling is that we are understaffed, that we are probably have overcommitted staff. Maybe one of the things we look at, and again, this is really a suggestion, would be is let us come up with, maybe between myself and Mr. Williams, come up with a few approaches, a few proposals on how really coming up with that sample size would look like, taking into account the wards, taking into account the sampling, taking into account the type of violations, everything that you just outlined, to make sure that you feel comfortable essentially on really pulling the trigger from that angle. Okay, my suggestion would be is probably not looking citywide, probably no more than looking at about 100 cases. Okay, and we can certainly dive into those specifics of that. And it's probably not going to pass the validity or the audit testing that we're all expecting, but at least gives the commission a much better view in terms of what either there's. I know there's a lot of room for improvement, and I think you will identify that by looking at those cases. I think you also can also ascertain to in terms of saying, hey, here's the number of here's the average number of hours that it takes to address a weed complaint. Here's the number of hours that it takes really to look at a zoning case. Here's the number of hours that it allocates on this. Do the multiplication, and then we can look at and make a determination what resources should we devote for that purpose. And I think then you should be able to compare what the status quo is today, and really what are some of the program I would say additions to the resources that we may need. And it may not just be bodies, it may be procedurals, maybe that other things that you may think of down the road. So because if you look at it, looking at 1,000 cases, that's going to take a significant amount of time really to go through those cases. Okay. And obviously you probably have to move into our office, so that way you can start looking at those cases, providing you access, looking at some of those hard files, look at all the stuff. I'm just trying to, and again, don't want to control that. This is really obviously our audit. That's what you're here for. That I'm just trying to suggest that to you on really trying to see, can we get a proposal from staff in terms of what that sampling would look like? Here's the number, not really make it overwhelming, so that way we put in place whatever the recommendations that you could come forth on evaluating those cases, feel comfortable in terms of evaluating those cases thoroughly, be able to make some recommendations on rooms for improvement, and then the allocation of resources given that. And obviously I think as we move along, it doesn't mean that we can't resurrect this discussion, and we don't have follow-up discussions as we move along, but this may be a good starting point to get us to put everything on the table to for the commission to pick and choose those 100 cases or whatever the number is, and that way you can look, identify them by case, by geographical location, by ward, but at least you're looking at those more in a simplified manner, because if you look at 1,000 cases, that's a lot of cases. And if the intent is really just to get a good view, I think 100 cases will be adequate, not be perfect. But again, let us not allow perfection to get in our way, but really to get us in terms of the right track of moving, of making some progress on something that we all have a gut feeling in terms of what we need and how do we go about it. So two things: resources and obviously room for improvements in terms of process and what we're doing today. So again, that's just my suggestion. And probably at the end of the day we can come up with that proposal, and then the commission can decide whether they choose a different path or they may be able to be okay with the proposed sampling or the sizing. Again, with the effort really to get us moving in the right direction sooner rather than later, rather than really to start looking at 1,000 cases that we may be there for a while. And again, trying to look at your time commitments to be able to do that. So thank you.
Yeah, those Madam are some Chair, good thoughts.
Madam Chair, I agree with Mr. De La Torre. If you go with that 95% and then an 8% error rate, that's not too far out there, and it should probably meet your needs of getting the base feeling for what's going on without being too skewed. You're looking at 148 cases or so, which is probably more doable than the 1,000.
Okay. The other thing, when you guys, so does that sound like a good approach, commissioners, for Mr. De La Torre and Aaron to come up with a, two or three different ways we could approach the sample size? And then they can come back at the next meeting with that.
And obviously Chair, with that, Madam Chair.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Go ahead.
Go ahead, Carlos.
And obviously with that, Madam Chair, we're not going to control which cases do we put forth.
Exactly.
Okay.
Yeah.
So it's really just, we're looking at the proposal in terms of the number of cases. Then either we choose a program that basically spits out what addresses are we going to look at, what cases we're going to look at that, or simply basically having a map that shows all the cases at different areas, color-coded differently. And then we said, we got to have so many for junk motor vehicles. Okay, let's pick those 5 or 6, 7 of them. And then you pick those. And at least we know we're trying to achieve the number, and we're trying to achieve the type of case based on that. And then we won't control which case are we looking at that. The commission will essentially decide whether it spits it out of a program, or you actually physically pick up a dot on the map, and then you look at, and then we look at that as part of that type of case that will be looked at as part of the 140 of the 200 cases that may be looked at.
Exactly. Yeah. Thanks for that clarification. And Mr. Commissioner Andrews?
I wanted to say that I agree with that approach. That gives us a good place to start from, and we can consider if we would want to make changes, but that seems logical and reasonable for what we have to accomplish.
And Commissioner Clark, what are your thoughts on that?
I think we have to start somewhere, and that sounds like a good place to start.
Excellent. And then I know you rattled off a whole bunch of numbers at the beginning, Mr. De La Torre, about how many cases are weeds and junk motor vehicle and all that. But hopefully that could be, I don't know if that would be taken into consideration or not in the, I don't know if we'd want to weight the sample size at all, maybe not. But I just, maybe that information percentage-wise, you know, 50% are for weeds, 20 are for JMVs, you know, maybe you can just add that to the list of information we get. It shouldn't take you too long to do that. And then in the interim, until we meet again, I'd like the commissioners to think about a spreadsheet we could develop and what information should be on the spreadsheet. So it would be somehow a location of the case, whether it's by ward or by, we split the city up into four quadrants or something. We say northwest, northeast, southeast, southwest, something. Some kind of way to know where the case is. And then columns for instance, like, when did the case open? When did the case close, if it's closed? What's the lapse time so far or overall? And maybe if we knew if there was recurrence, and you can tell that by looking at the address and the cases, whether it recurs, and the type of case, weeds, JMVs, zoning, whatever it might be. It's just some additional, just a little bit of information so we can draw some conclusions at the end on what we looked at and case number. We don't need the address, I don't think. But so if you can think about that a little bit, and we can all come up with a, because I don't know if we're going to look at these cases as a group or if we're going to go off on our independent. The three of us independently, it would be faster, but I don't know who's got the resources. But it would, that'll be another thing we'll ask about maybe at the next meeting or just consider. I don't know if it's beneficial to look at them as a group or not, or just to have the three of us look at our own cases with code enforcement and then come back with our spreadsheets and put everything together in the end for the report. And then we can all look at them and draw whatever conclusions we're going to draw. So it might be easier. And so, Aaron, is that a doable thing? It was kind of like our ride along with code enforcement. We went out independently and then we reported back what we did. Is that doable under the open meeting rule?
Yes, Madam Chair. Yes, that's doable. Whenever I do audits in a team, whenever I have a team working on an audit, that's kind of how we split up the work also. And that way you can kind of share your independent findings with each other and see if it's skewing one way with one piece of the sample versus another piece. Those are usually meaningful discussions on what you find out. Now, the logistics of how we're going to do this, I would guess that we're probably going to work off of the spreadsheet that we'll get once we determine the sample size and the method. That's how you can divvy up who has which cases. Probably some information you can glean from the actual extract of the system, but then there will probably be some point where you'll need to do physical review. I gauge from what Mr. De La Torre was saying, where you might need to check actual case files. So you might have to, we might need to coordinate times, just like we did for the ride along, for commissioners to set up time where they can kind of have an office set up and staff assist them with system access, and then they can dig into whatever details might not be in that extract from the system.
Sounds like a plan. Yeah, we don't want to tax code enforcement all on the same day. And so that would be a great idea to mix it up a little bit. And everybody's got a different schedule anyhow. Okay, so do we have a plan for going forward? And just to recap, it was Mr. De La Torre is going to work with Aaron on trying to present a couple, two, maybe three options on how we could gather the sample plans, the cases that we're going to be looking at. And then the commissioners are going to have an idea maybe of what information we want to be able to collect. And so we can all be using the same spreadsheet. And then after we look at how maybe we can have a shorter meeting next time to determine, you know, how we're going to be doing the sampling and then what information to collect. And then we'll have independent meetings with code enforcement, the three commissioners, and actually look at the cases. And then we'll get back together after that. We can talk about that at the next meeting. So does that sound like a plan to the other commissioners too?
Yes, Madam Chair, that sounds like a reasonable approach.
Yeah, I can go along with that.
Okay, excellent. So do we all, Mr. De La Torre and Aaron, do you have any questions before I do an adjournment?
Let me just clarify the items I have here in my notes then for next meeting agenda, Madam Chair. Choose this for the commissioners. They will choose the sample options at the next meeting. Those will be provided by coordinated between Mr. De La Torre and myself from now, sometime before the next meeting, so that commissioners can review them and then you can discuss and decide at next meeting. Second agenda item is discuss the criteria the commissioners will use for their review of the sample. And then third agenda item will be to schedule on-site review as needed for each commission.
So Aaron, did you say that you're going to be able to send those sample method options out prior to the meeting?
I think that would probably be most efficient. That way we can, we'll go out to all the commissioners, and that way you have kind of your pre-meeting items. It will also be agenda material for next meeting, but that way you have it in advance. You can study it and discuss at the next meeting.
Excellent. Yeah, that would be great. Just so we don't have to make our minds up on a real short notice. That'd be great. Okay, that sounds great to me. Do either of the commissioners have any more questions or comments or anything before I do an?
I just have one question of Aaron. Can I get the back note and the materials that the other commissioners have so that I am not kind of looking in the dark?
Yes, sir. I'll send them out by the end of the week.
Appreciate it.
And I think, Commissioner Clark, they are on the IAPC website under the code enforcement subcommittee. Actually, Aaron, are all of the meeting minutes are there, right?
Madam Chair, that is correct. You should be able to find the meeting minutes, the recordings, the audio part of the recordings, and the legal action reports. I can send that link again to this subcommittee so you have it available.
Yeah, and Commissioner Clark, the recordings are like 2 hours long, each of them or something, but if you have a chance to listen to any of those, it would be, or at least the ones that might seem relevant, that it's a lot to ask. But if you have a chance to listen to any of that, that would be give you a better idea. At least listen to the first one and find out, you know, what it sounds like, because the meeting minutes are very brief. The documented meeting minutes. And so the content is really in the recordings. And then you received the state. We all received the statement of work from Aaron this time. So at least gives you an idea of where we started from and why we're doing it in the first place.
Thank you.
Excellent. All right. Well, unless anybody has any objections, I'd like to adjourn this meeting. It's 4:23. And thank you very much, Carlos. Your input and Aaron, your input is always appreciated. And I appreciate the commissioners for showing up. And have a great week.
Thank you, everyone. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you. Do the same. Take care.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Thanks.
Bye-bye.